Today, I bring you an episode with James Maloney and Selene Urban on how to get started with meditation, self-discovery, building trust and connection with your audience through a humane and authentic message, and key learnings from their entrepreneurial journey. We also talked about different meditation and breathing techniques, marketing and automation tools, the struggles of having your own business, and how James and Selene approach work and life. I truly hope you enjoy it. Remember that you can listen to this episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you'll find detailed show notes at gettingsimple.com. If you want to ask me a question about this or previous episodes, go to gettingsimple.com/ask and hit the appropriate button.
Hey, it's Nono, and this is the Getting Simple Podcast.
Today, I bring you two guests to the podcast. One of them you might know from the first episode, and the other one is somebody new that we're going to bring you today. We have here a good friend of mine, James Maloney. So we met in North Carolina in 2011.
Yes.
And we crossed paths in Cambridge, Massachusetts again in 2017.
Yes.
And I believe in March 2017, I had this idea of recording an experimental episode of what could become a podcast for Getting Simple. And we in fact did what became the first ever episode of the podcast.
Yes, the very first. And it was a pleasure to be on there with you, Nono.
I remember putting a lot of t-shirts around the microphones. I didn't know anything about recording. I think everything's getting a bit better now. And that episode was the first ever to be released on December 2017. And this is actually the first ever podcast to be on video and also to be with two guests at once. As I said, we have here James Maloney and also Selene Urban.
Yes.
Did I pronounce that right?
Exactly.
Yeah? How yes. do you pronounce it?
Selene Urban.
Okay.
Yeah.
It took me 3 months to get that. No, so well done. You're miles ahead of me.
I brought you some sort of story about James 2 years ago. And at that point, he had just finished a book that he published online. You self-published, right?
Yes.
This book you wrote while you were working at a consultancy firm in Australia?
Pretty much, yes. I was doing strategy consulting at the time, but it was for a company specifically. Yeah. And I wrote it at that time.
Okay. And you took a big leap in your life when you left your 9-to-5 or maybe, I don't know, 9-to-9 job at the time and then decided to go into a new path.
That's right. Exactly.
So what I would like to hear a bit more, so we're in Malaga, Spain today. So last time we were in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I'm taking this opportunity to hear more about how you've got to where you're today and how you cross paths with Selene. And yeah, if you guys can tell me a bit about how you found each other and how your life changed after that and what you're working on and doing now.
Yes. So when we had that first interview a few years ago, that was really a few months or maybe 6 months into that entrepreneurial journey. And, you know, entrepreneurship is pretty much just like self-discovery or learning. It's never ending. Markets are always shifting. You're always changing and it's a very dynamic space. I was quite new into that. And since then, it's been a journey of really figuring out what type of products I want to be associated with online and what I want to sell and actually shifting from where I began, which was an affiliate selling other people's products to creating our own products and selling them to people. That's to create your own product and have it profitable and sell it in the online world is extremely difficult, starting off in that affiliate space to begin with. And I'm sure I'll head back there in the future as well, because you always want to have a few different diversified income streams. But starting off there was really powerful for me to get some knowledge under my belt, having never done marketing, never done entrepreneurship before, and then transition to the big boy league of actually creating your own products and trying to build a business really from scratch that's fully aligned with a message that I wanted to bring to the world.
So how did you cross paths with Selene?
Yes. So we met in September 2017. And yeah, this was a few months after I was with you. And we actually met in Colombia, where Selene is from. And we met at an ayahuasca retreat. I'm not sure if your listeners have heard of that or they know what it's about. For me, it was really a journey of self-discovery. And I was at a point in my life where I wanted to go beyond theory. I wanted to go beyond knowledge that I just read in a book. And I wanted to I was frustrated enough about all these people talking about spirituality and hearing it and thinking that the messages were so positive, but is it really real, or is it just some nice positive talk? So I decided that I wanted to get the answers for myself, because that was the only way I'd ever really know for certain. I went to an ayahuasca retreat, which is not something I recommend for everyone, but if it's something that you're called to, then I do recommend it. And number one is you got to go to a safe place. You got to go to someone that's experienced. But we met there and we hit it off. We just, the knowledge that we had each kind of come to in our lives made us have some great conversations together. And from there, it was up and down. We didn't go into relationships right away. It was many months later that we actually got together.
Yeah.
What were you doing at the time, Celine?
I was teaching yoga and Zumba. A few years back, I was doing my musical performance training. And I tried it out, but I felt like that was not my path where I could be really... I felt like I was actually doing a change in people's life. So I was teaching yoga and Zumba, and I was not supposed to be in Colombia when I was there, just like James wasn't supposed to be in Colombia, but I was going to visit my family. And my mom had come too, so it was my grandma, my uncle. So I was mainly for myself and my family. I was not looking to meet someone. I just had ended a relationship. So it was fully, we were both on our own paths there. And we were definitely not expecting.
That was one of the most beautiful parts, is that neither of us were looking for someone. Mm-hmm. So we met at such a pure space. There wasn't this needing to find someone. So we got to actually see each other and talk without this background mind chatter of, I'm looking for a girlfriend, I'm looking for a partner. It was really beautiful.
Yeah. And also just meeting in a, just not a regular place, of course, but we're going within and going in a difficult path, and both of us going through things, and meeting that way allowed us to just dive in into our relationship or friendship, whatever it was, very direct compared to what it would have been.
You, James, are from Australia and you, Selim, are from Colombia, but you're living in Europe at the time, I think, before the retreat. Yeah. How did you get from there, from getting to know each other, into going to formalize a project like the one you're doing today? And hopefully we can hear more about.
We separated ways after the retreat. Selena went back to Germany. I went back to Australia, but we kept in touch.
And in touch, it means every single day, talking or writing and sharing what was going through.
Sharing very, very deeply and very, a lot of vulnerability. I learned a lot about vulnerability there, and just the power of saying things that you're totally scared about and seeing the rewards of that in life. But so she's in Germany, I'm in Australia, and yoga is a big part of Selena's life. And you actually ended up back in Bali.
I have been working with my mother and her husband. I work in yoga teacher trainings, so people who want to learn to teach yoga. And I was back in Bali, and that's when you came along again. And for us, things weren't clear. As in, I was going through a phase of my life where I was discovering a part of me that I never allowed to discover, meaning getting to know more men and connecting more in a physical way and an emotional, not really, but it was like a phase where I needed, and I never experienced it in my life. So it was difficult, it was tricky, because I knew there was such a deep connection with James. And I remember a call what we had where we told each other that we love each other, but in non-romantic way. It was such a deep connection. And back then when we were in Bali, things were still unclear. And then after a while, I think it was when I finished the training, the last training, I got done teaching, and then I felt that I had to go to Australia. That was not related to James back then. I've been going to Bali for a long time.
Yes, that's what she tells people.
So it was so close to Bali, and I never went to Australia. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go. And then James told me that I can stay at his place. Here comes a funny story. That's when I took the leap. I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do in Australia. I'm going to just go. And he picked me up from the airport. And the funny part was that I thought, because it was unclear how long I was going to stay. So I thought he would have like maybe a couch where I could sleep, or a little room where I could. No, he invited me directly into his sleeping area. He's like, hey, you're going to sleep with me. And so that's basically where it started officially. And just being in our lives together. And yeah.
And I tell you, we have such a beautiful, deep relationship right now. And for anyone who wants to get there or has that you will know that you need to go through a lot of work to get there. And it comes back to vulnerability. It comes back to your own personal growth, going through a lot of challenging situations. There was a lot of tears involved and
a lot of resistance too at the beginning.
But just really seeing yourself and your inner journey and allowing yourself to be honest with that. And then you can find a partner that you can be honest about that with too. It leads to a lot of growth and can, you know, to a lifelong partnership.
Well, thanks for sharing this with us. I would love to know a bit more about when did this become something that, you know, because at the time, James, you were doing your own work, right? Your own independent work. And at some point, I guess you transitioned into joining forces and tried to organize maybe projects or maybe retreats or maybe other workshops for people. And then I'm not sure if you teach them together, if you teach them separately or what they are. And
yes, we usually always teach together. But the way we actually got into the business or project side of things was through that deep inner journey, I came to experience something that I really wanted to share with the world. And I think it's the same story with Selena. Was she had that same experience and she thought that this was a worthy message to share with the world. And so I shifted from doing something that I loved and I enjoyed to trying to do something that was fully like my life's mission or at least part of that life's mission. So it went to a deeper layer of something that would bring me even more fulfillment because it really touched, I guess, my soul's purpose.
Yes. I remember the moment where you were in meditation and you told me I have to share something with you because I was going through a lot of deep inner work and he told me I just received a message and we're supposed to work together. And of course, in that moment, it was like, I live in Germany. I basically am going to throw everything away. And how are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to share something that is that we have both experienced? Is someone even going to want to receive the knowledge that we received? That's when it started. It wasn't like, okay, let's do it. From tomorrow on, we'll work together. It was like, first he told me that. It was scary at first to listen to that. But then from there on, we started getting clarity on, okay, yeah, this is actually something that we have to do. This is our life's mission.
Just, you come across a project which is so important to you, and it's not because your boss told you, or it's not because you want to make money, or it's not because you think it's going to feel good. It's one of these blessings of finding something which you think is worthy of devoting your life to. And if you find a project like that, it's hard to say no to.
And for me, it made sense why I went through everything that I went through in my life to that point to realize I'm about to apply every single thing.
Yeah. When was this? So when was the leap of thinking, starting to think about working together?
We met in September 2017. Selena came to Australia in January 2018. And then maybe this was sometime in February 2018.
And what are the themes, the main themes that you're working on?
I guess under the path of meditation, and that's a path to helping people, the way we describe it is remember their truth. Whether you want to call it spiritual or philosophical, whatever it is, it's this idea of, or it taps into this idea of who are we, why are we here? And for the people who follow quantum physics and things like that, or just modern day science, it links back into this fact of how everything is energy and understanding that we ourselves are energy. The human body is energy when you look at it deeply enough or close enough. And we're trying to help people to experience that. So it's not a theory where I just tell you an answer, but it's through meditation or through a plant medicine retreat, if it's right for you, or ideally both, you get to experience this knowledge of, wow, I am more than the mind. I'm more than the ego.
And kind of catching everyone wherever they are. So even if you're at the beginning of realizing I can actually observe in my mind, or if you're at another point where you've had some spiritual experiences, but don't understand them or want to go deeper or want to free yourself from something. So catching every single being at their path where they are, guiding the spiritual journey wherever the people are through meditation.
Our stance is that spirituality is not different to reality. It's not something which you have to then distance yourself from people and from connections, although they might be part of the journey. It's really about truly living this life that you have here on earth. And whether you believe in multiple lifetimes or not, like the fact of the matter is you're in this life right now. And by understanding some truths about reality and yourself and being able to transcend the limitations of the mind and the ego, it allows you to actually live this life fully. And at the end of the day, that's what we really want for people.
Mm.
And what are some of the formats that you work with in these workshops?
Yeah, at first because this path is, we work with the mind, right? We try to allow the mind to calm down. So through information that we have come in our path of how the mind works, and then going into actually straight meditation, because that's the only way where people will come to their own experience. Those are the formats, basically first informing and then experience.
Yes, and it depends on who we're working with. Mm-hmm. So if you've done a lot of self-work and if you're already meditating, then we can go straight into meditation work with you. But if you've never done meditation before and you've never done some self-work, maybe we need to work on some earlier things at a far more mental level before you're ready to even say, okay, I'm going to sit down and meditate. The whole reason of the information is to give the person's mind the belief or the desire that they need to meditate. Because at the end of the day, we can't meditate for them. So we're trying to cultivate this understanding for them to start that.
And does this take the form of a presential workshop, or how do you engage with people?
With the online courses, people obviously go through at their own pace. And we were offering, I think it was monthly live calls where we would talk about things and people would check in with us. People also write to us emails directly, and we either talk over email or we have a call with them. And in the workshop that we have coming up in Berlin on the 16th or 17th of this month, that'll be a group class. So that'll be both of us working together in a yoga studio. What's the studio's name in Berlin? Depends again where people are ready. Sometimes they just want to do the online course. Either they don't want to meet us, or they're shy, or they're too busy. But once they've gotten down that path, they will write to us by email, and then they'll want to speak to us over a video call.
So it truly depends on where the person's at. For example, with my uncle, he was ready. He just came from him. He was ready to receive whatever we wanted to give him. And he's, can we do a meditation session? And in person, obviously, it's much more powerful, because in those moments, we see what are we supposed to do in that moment where he was open to receive. We were both, our bodies were guided into energy healing or supporting his meditation space. And from that experience, he got the blessing to experience something he has never experienced before. And he has worked with plant medicine before too. I guess it's more powerful when we're able to be in person. But if we're not, if it's just online, it's still through calls, we're able to feel the other person's journey, and it goes the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, the in-person stuff is most fulfilling to me, because you can see a very big transformation in a very short amount of time. So that's obviously fun and enjoyable to watch. And if we could do more of that personal stuff, it would be good. It's just hard to scale that. So you have to be really selective in who you work with.
What are some of the types of meditation for people who are out there and don't know a lot about meditation? I would include myself. I'm not too knowledgeable. How would you classify, or what types of meditations would you highlight?
When it comes to meditation, I think the best way to look at it is to first figure out what is the outcome you're seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are looking just to calm their mind. Why? Because they're busy at work and they want to be able to sleep at night. Some people are looking to really sharpen their mind. Why? Because they want to be able to focus. They want to be more productive. They want to be better at what they do. And then some other people are looking to actually go beyond the ego, go beyond the self. They want to merge with consciousness. And why? Because usually they have a lot of questions. They want answers. They want to know the truth about the world. So the first step is to figure out what outcome do you want. And then from there, you can find the meditative technique, and then you try it out. For concentration, some people might not call it meditation, but you can focus your point of focus on an object and try and keep it there. For sleeping, you might have a guided meditation you can find on YouTube. And we also have some meditations that allow you to really come into calmness, or you might do some breathing work. And then for the more answers-based meditation, trying to receive insights, trying to receive knowledge, Vipassana is a good version of that. But the one that we personally teach is called the Life Energy Meditation.
What would be some of the earlier struggles that people who are not familiar with the medium or with the practice of meditation would find, and maybe something that pushes mm-hmm. them away?
You mean to the meditation that we teach or in general meditation?
Both.
The sentence that you hear the most is, I cannot shut off my mind. My mind is way too busy. Or I cannot sit still. Or I cannot close my eyes. So I would say those are the, if I go back to the beginning, quote unquote, of when you start meditation, those are the main things that challenge you.
And the question, am I doing it right?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I asked myself that hundreds of times.
Yeah. Am I doing it right? So those are the, yes, true. That's the beginning phase, let's say, when you're still getting into meditation. Then farther on, that's when you enter the next level, not really level, but the next step of, can I go deeper with my meditation? Can I gain insights? Can I gain peace? Can I heal something that has to be healed? So there, the difficulties that come through are, yeah, anxieties, fears around energy. Because the mind only understands intellectuality and only logic. So as soon as energy comes into your own experience through body vibrations or through visuals or through voices that you might hear, but that are not in this physical world, that's where the fear starts kicking in. Yeah, I guess those are the two paths that it can, you know, manifest the difficulties.
And for the people who are new, who have those questions of, am I doing it right? I can't get my mind to shut up. Every type of good meditation will tell you the point is not to quiet your mind. The point is to do the meditation, which will then lead to your mind naturally quieting over time. So for example, in Vipassana, they get you to focus on either the breath or feeling a part of your body, and your mind's just going crazy in the background while you do it. But when you just keep coming back to the point that you're focusing on, the mind slowly but steadily starts to quiet down, quiet down, quiet down. And that's the same with the life energy meditation we teach. We bring people's awareness into the energy flowing in their body. And if the mind distracts them, that's okay. You just gently come back to bringing your awareness back into that interior energy field, and the mind will quiet when it's ready to quiet.
For people who don't know about it, how do you call this type of meditation?
Yeah, it's spelled VIPASS, sometimes with an S and a little thing up on the S and an A.
Yeah.
Some people pronounce it Vipassana, yeah. Many people have thrown themselves into that meditation style. It's not a style, but many people do that because they've heard, they take it as a challenge. You cannot talk, and you're 10 days with many people just sitting still and going through the same meditation over and over again.
Can you tell us a bit more about the details? I would say more a bit of the technique, maybe in pragmatic ways, like maybe the length or how do you sit, or do you not need to sit? Do you do it when you're still, when you're doing other things? Or I don't think you can probably summarize it in three lines, but some of the main things that you would thing that make this practice unique or different than others?
What makes it different is that you do not need to be in a specific place. You do not need to sit specifically right. You're able to just lay down or stand up, because the main difference is that we do not see it as a practice. The same energy or the same state of being that you experience while meditating, you can merge it with your every single day state of being. So even if we're talking right now, I'm able to feel my energy without having to sit and close my eyes and do a mudra, a hand gesture with my hands. So I guess that's the big difference. We stop seeing meditation as a temporary practice and then seeing it as a 24/7 state of being.
Selena touched on some of those key differences of, you don't need to sit in lotus position or some meditative posture. We encourage people to start lying down at first, actually, whereas a lot of meditations encourage you to be sitting. And then the three progressions are actually lying down, sitting, standing. And a lot of meditations don't advise you to do it standing, but we actually want them when they're more progressed to do it standing, because it's about this energy in their body which is the same energy that's in nature, that's in the world, that is the world, that is the universe, and about allowing that to really come into your consciousness and to flower.
We're not saying it's wrong. There are reasons for why most meditations are taught in a sitting posture. They say many times because the energy, whenever people work with the breath, pranayama in Sanskrit called, it can get to a point where the person might not be ready to receive the energy and they might feel too much and eventually maybe just fall back, or which is why it's such a safe, the life energy meditation is such a safe way of getting into meditation, because we're not creating something. We're not wanting you to experience something. It's just wanting you to come to a state of being where you can observe your inner energy and then eventually where you can experience it coming alive. Yeah.
There is something that you've mentioned before to me, that is this distinction between technique and spirituality. Can we hear a bit about that as well?
Maybe you mean practice and spirituality. Yes, I think.
Yeah, so the two different things of you can take this as one more activity in your life that you do to obtain some benefits.
Yes.
And then the other side where is to find, maybe pursue in some point enlightenment or some other, fulfilling some other part of your inner soul or your mind and find some purpose.
They're on the same curve or the same line, but one comes before the other in 99% of the cases.
Yeah, everything begins.
Everything begins because there's an identity or a mind or an ego or character, and everyone has their identity of who they are. And at some point, meditation as the technique or the method or the practice begins because that character, you or me, wants something different in their mind, more focus or more peace or whatever it is. And spirituality, in the way that we're talking about it here, which, like I said, at the highest level, there is no difference between reality and spirituality. It's just life is. That's the end of the story. But at some point, you transition from wanting to get a peaceful mind to wanting to get more answers about life, deeper questions about life. And I feel that that's the spiritual pursuit. When you want this understanding of who am I? Why am I here? Why are we here? What am I? That's a question a lot of people don't ask. What am I? That's where spiritual pursuit comes in.
Yeah. And there can be a moment where you do not live from your mind. So at the beginning, of course, as James already said, you are experiencing your life from a place of your dislikes and likes, from your conditionings, from what you need in this exact moment. And when we differentiate practice between practice and just living or being, it's merely the focus of the mind. Like, for example, when you're meditating and when you're visualizing something or you're counting your breaths, your mind is calmer than normal, but it's still active. You're still counting your breath. But there is another state of being where you're not counting the breath, you're just observing the breath. So I guess that's when spirituality becomes your state of being instead of, oh, I'm just being spiritual. Yeah.
And how would you, if you have words for it, how would you define enlightenment? What do you pursue? I know that it's hard to define with words and it's something more than you have to experience. But what could you say about it?
It's the moment when you are able to understand life, truly. When you remember and when you understand what you are and how and why everything is happening. And that with ease, because every struggle moves away. And it might sound very not logical when I say everything feels connected and disconnected at the same time, but you're able to observe everything and therefore experience life much more richer and an intimate way.
It's very simple in the one sense where it's the reality for what it really is. So that's one way you can describe it. And there are different expressions of enlightenment. If you think about it as a state of consciousness, and when we say a state of consciousness, imagine yourself when you're drunk, when you're sober, or when you're excited, or you're super focused because there's a car up ahead of you that just stopped. These are all different states of consciousness where you see the world differently, your focus is different. And in an enlightened state of consciousness, you're essentially, you're in the world, but you're not of the world, which is, to reference, you know, a book, a popular book title, is one way to put it as well. And it's something that you can never predict. You're limited, the mind is limited in understanding what it's never experienced before. And the common case of when you experience enlightenment is you say, oh, this is it. You know, I never expected it to be this. Wow. And there's also some tricks along the path, because maybe you feel like you are enlightened already. And that can be the ego tricking you into stopping, or tricking you into coming back into your ego, because it tells you, you've already made it. We can stop here. You're complete now. But when you really experience it, it's quite unmistakable, and it's quite a remarkable and definitely rememberable. I don't think that's a word. But
yeah, and I guess it's difficult, as you already mentioned, it is difficult to talk about it in words, because every single word we put out, comes out of our mouths, is a label. So every word, you feel different. You connect to the word, to the label, in a different way. So even if we talk about it, about remembering your truth, is how we experience enlightenment. Someone else experiences as awakening to life. So you can describe it in a different way. And that's something that we have come to receive, is that no matter how different you describe it, we're actually just talking about the same thing. Just like I remember that one night where I received, you can call it a download or whatever you want to call it, but it was a moment of when I understood that every single thing I've learned from different cultures, it just meets in the center. And that's something that I will never forget. And that's something that can describe.
Yeah, for some reason, I think it might be because in our culture, there hasn't been a long history. We were not following these sort of practices or these pursuits in the Western world. But in other, you mentioned before the ayahuasca retreat, for example, in other cultures, like in maybe in different tribes or in different communities and things like that, they might have been experiencing these sort of enlightenments or experiences across centuries, maybe, or decades, I don't know. And they actually, they say that in their indigenous languages and in their language, they actually have words to describe things as the attraction that you might feel from other body, or that download that you said before. So there, it seems language, English, maybe Spanish or other languages, we don't have words to describe these feelings.
Obviously, if you look to India and a lot of the yoga scriptures, there is a lot of, and the Vedic texts, there is a lot of knowledge there as well. But the other thing that a modern day yogi will really know is that times are changing. It's always changing. So the truths that are spoken about thousands of years ago, some of them are very relevant today. Some are not so relevant. There's been new information received, et cetera, et cetera. So we can't solely rely on the past as the bedrock of all knowledge. It's really about, again, being in the present and understanding reality as it is now. But it's for the people who are called to that quest of enlightenment, or just that desire to know. And normally it comes from suffering. Normally it comes from being very unhappy about something that you're like, I need answers. Like, mm-hmm. What the hell is happening? It's a worthwhile path to walk if you're called to it.
In the words of our friend or client who joined us, he said, even if you feel the slightest bit of interest or curiosity of diving deeper or unhappiness.
An inkling that something is just a little off in your life. Even if you're the happiest guy in the world, but just an inkling that something 1%, 0.1% is missing, that's a call as well. And mm-hmm. We should also mention our friend and mentor, Peter Burkhart, because mm-hmm. He was actually a man that I met in Colombia as well. And he taught me the life energy meditation verbally, and he also shared a PDF with it, which we worked with him on to update and make it more accessible for people. So we definitely need to mention him and say thank you to him.
You have also talked before about, not in this podcast, but we talked actually yesterday about the deepest side and the surrender that comes with that practice, and how people might get scared, or what does that mean to achieve that? Can you comment a bit on that?
Absolutely. One of the biggest challenges we had when we started trying to share this information with the world was we asked ourselves, who really wants this? Because at its depth, what spirituality means, or what remembering your truth means, is coming into a union with the world. And You can say with God, with divinity, with, you know, the universal energy, with whatever you want to call it. And what that actually means is if you're merging with life, it means you've got to say goodbye to yourself and who you are in this identity mm-hmm. at one level. And that's actually asking people to give everything up. But at the same time, you get everything. The challenge or the fear there of people is, if I'm not me, then I'm nothing. Who am I? And on the other side of the coin is that you get everything you've been searching for.
Exactly.
It all comes to you. But there's this massive leap of faith that only, in most cases, suffering leads you to take. Because if you're pretty happy, why am I going to jump across this cliff gap that I might fall down? But if you've got this desire, but maybe because of some suffering, you're like, okay, I'm going to jump across this gap. I'm going to take this leap of faith. But just that fear of losing yourself, because you think, most people think they are the mind. They think they are the identity.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if their identity goes, everything goes, they die. And that's the challenge. But for people who have made the leap of faith and have got to the other side, they will tell you it's more than everything you want when you get over there. And you definitely do not have to die and, you know, go to heaven to get this. Like, it's accessible in this lifetime when the time is right for you.
And I guess people fear losing control. It's not a fear that you point out very clearly, because it's like when you think about your regular life and you think you can control what you eat, you control how you breathe, you control who you meet, how you talk, how you dress, everything. And then, yeah, back to what James said, when you lose all of that, then who or what controls it? Like, what happens? And that by itself can be scary to the mind only, though.
How would you recommend that people who don't know anything or have maybe tried a bit, they haven't really got into it, or maybe people who think, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
How would you recommend that they get started if they would like to try, maybe even on their own?
If it's to do with meditation, find a nice, just simple meditation guide that speaks to you clearly. When I was learning, I read like I downloaded a 300-page PDF and I got like through 30 pages of it. I'm like, is this what it takes to meditate? Oh my God, this is tough. So you want to try and avoid making it too complicated. So if you can find just a nice guide, and there's a lot of things on YouTube these days that can shed light on the fact that meditation doesn't need to be complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And dispelling the myths that you need to have a quiet mind. That one step is going to give people a lot of peace when they're meditating. But at the beginning, everything does need to be a practice. The mind needs to say, okay, I'm going to sit down for 15 minutes every day, or at least 6 days a week, or 5 days a week, and I'm going to put in the time. And that's the only way you can really begin is when you have some consistency and you have some discipline and you've got some good knowledge. And of course, we're more than happy to answer people's questions if they want to write to us via email. We can point you in the right direction.
Would you like to comment now on how can people find your workshops, your work, or how can people reach you? What's the best way?
Head to our website and find the contact form there to drop us an email. So the website is guidingyourawakening.com.
I'll put it on the show notes. So you can go actually to gettingsimple.com/ and the number of the episode, and I will link to the show notes.
To your question before of how can you meditate when you're by yourself and you're still, or you call yourself a beginner, I guess when the mind gets to a point of familiarity that it already knows a simple meditation that you have chosen, it wants something else. So I guess the tip that I would give to anyone out there who wants to continue or start meditating by himself, it will be just a simple breathing meditation, because the breath calms the mind, and sticking to one thing allows your mind, or at some point, hopefully, to discover what meditation can bring you. So simplicity, just choosing one meditation, a simple meditation, and sticking with it.
What would be some example of a simple, maybe counting meditation, breathing or something?
Mm-hmm. For example, depending on how your breath capability is, but at the beginning, it's good to just start with Samavriti, it's called. It's the same length breath. So just inhaling, counting to four, and exhaling, counting to four. That's the most simplest and very effective if you just do it every time, every single day.
Selena's recorded an audio that can guide you in that. So if you do email us.
How long is that audio?
It's a 4-minute, 49-second audio. Yeah,
we tried to squeeze it in a time where everyone can do it.
We could actually play it. Maybe at the end of the episode, maybe.
That's very good. And then also another audio is a way to, is a guided meditation into the life energy meditation. So that's really good for beginners as a way to just get them a little calmer before they start, quote unquote, truly meditating.
How is the feeling of having learned this, that this thing exists, that you can feel this way and wanting to communicate it to other people?
Definitely frustration is up there as one of the feelings of that. It's like you found this amazing toy and you want to share with everyone. And then you realize it's the lesson of life is people are on their own journey. People are playing in their own little play yards. And some people will really value it, but it's got to be the right time for them. So learning how to really communicate to people where they're at in their journey has been a massive lesson for me. Massive. I know.
Yeah. And also a lesson to, or a remembrance to be compassionate. Because we've been there where we were immersed in our mind. I used to have anxieties every single day. Now I don't. Remembering that we used to be there too. And being able to communicate it if we were still there. Finding the right words for every single person that has been like the journey and the struggle.
We can start segueing a bit into the topic of how did you manage to market this project? Because it ties up with what you're saying about the person has to be in the right moment of their life or maybe have the right worldview or mindset at the time.
Yeah.
Because I would guess as well that the people who end up coming to the workshops are either people who are looking for some change or people who are already on the mindset of knowing what meditation is, but wanting to learn more and things like that. How do you manage to channel your message, letting people who want to engage in these type of things find you?
Yes, we obviously have our website. We do paid advertising through Facebook. So the way that we find people is through the Facebook platform usually. And it's about trying to figure out what's something we can offer them that's going to be useful and free that we can share with them to get them into kind of our community. And we often share the Life Energy Meditation Guide for that. And then for the workshops or programs or the paid material, it's about trying to communicate in a way that they understand what the benefits are. And it's been challenging because when you think about the real world problems of I need some money to pay for my child's tuition, or I want to go buy the good new shirt that just came out last week, or I want to go and spend 30 minutes meditating to come and truly know myself. The mind is far easier to convince it to go for the short-term gains instead of the long-term stuff. Trying to communicate a compelling message has been a big challenge for us. And I guess in those situations, what we've really learned is what we have been learning is the importance of getting people to know you, to like you, to resonate with your story. And we really failed at the beginning with not sharing enough content about who we are and our lives so that people could actually get to know us and get to see their challenges in our journey. And that itself is actually very attractive because then they're not buying the product, they're almost buying your journey and the solutions that come with that. We didn't do that enough at the beginning. Mm. And, you know, we've had some successful advertising campaigns. We've had some terrible advertising campaigns. It's the learning process. And sometimes you get a little lost along the way. You want to make the money. Sometimes you're too blind in your passion that you forget some basics of marketing. So it's the whole time is a learning journey.
I just remembered most of the people who have come to us to work with us and have opened their mind and hearts to work with us are the ones who say, I just felt that I needed to work with you. And connecting it to what you just said, it's truly important what we learn to just share our own personal story that will get others to feel us. And the struggle has simply been, you know, how to communicate it so people take the jump then from feeling to, okay, I'm going to go to a retreat or I'm going to get this webinar, I'm going to this and this.
Yesterday, you mentioned that human interest stories, right? Something that maybe makes the, let's call it audience or the interested people connect with you in a more humane way, I would say, and not feel detached. What are some of the techniques or small details that make a campaign feel a bit more humane and more personal than just offering a product.
Mm-hmm. I guess when I write the ads, I just go as if I'm talking to you. I'm not focusing so much on the product at first. I'm focusing on what do you need from me right now? And at the beginning, I most of the times we start off by just calling out whoever we want to talk to. And then from there on, it's either a story about us or a direct communication, and then bringing in the product, linking it to why we just talk to you.
And with something like this, another mistake we didn't really understand early on is that you do have to play the long game in an offering like this, because people are going to be ready only when they're ready. We did try and get the sale mm-hmm. quickly, and it didn't work so well. We were able to actually get some very quick sales, which was interesting to see that marketing working, but it didn't pay off in the long run. So just this idea of connecting with them and not trying to push the sell, but get them actually into your space, reading your different blog posts, reading your FAQ, reading your guide, to a point where when they are ready, then they know who to turn to. That's been a learning for us, is just they're going to buy when they are ready to buy, not when we want them to buy.
And what were the actions that made you feel that there were some people that were starting to understand who you were and engaging? And because many times I feel on the internet, all the actions and all the feelings get summarized as likes and
yes,
even not that, maybe just visits. And you don't even know if that's an automated thing or if it's a human behind it.
We've received direct messages. That's basically the biggest sign of people are understanding us and feeling us and wanting to learn more and feel trust with us. So people have written to us about deeper things that I'm sure they do not share with everyone. Their openness showed us that they're ready for us. Instead of just a like, as you said, yes, a like and a comment and a follow doesn't mean much nowadays. It's so easy to do that. It's like automated.
We've had people, you know, love our ads, put a love heart on a sponsored post on Facebook, and then they don't actually even get the free guide we're offering. So mm-hmm. It's a reasonable indicator, but it's not a good one. The best one is, are people actually writing to you? And I sent an email out the other day, actually, and I had so many more email replies than we've had before. It came back to that, just the authenticity in the way that I wrote it, and people feel that. It's not all about them and it's not all about you. You always need to find this balance between like a real conversation. It's not just about someone else. It's both of you in there together. But if you're getting people engaging and actually replying to the emails that you're sending out, because you should always be building a list, even if you're doing advanced remarketing and stuff like that, always be building the list. And if they're replying, they're engaging.
When you say list, for whoever doesn't understand, it's a mailing list, right? Like a newsletter or something, just gathering people's emails or some way that you can reach to them in case that in the future you actually have something to tell them, or maybe mm-hmm. sell a book or even give a free guide, as you just mentioned.
Exactly, yeah, an email list.
And I guess many people forget that the mailing list is not just mere about sharing with them our products, but connection. It just really comes back to connection. And that can only be achieved if we are able to stay transparent for them as we are between us. So many times that's forgotten.
Yeah, many times people forget that you actually have a reply button, right? You can just press reply mm-hmm. and then send another email the other way. And
we've had people reply to us and they said they're not sure if like it's a robot they're talking to, but they wanted to reply because it touched them or whatever the reason is. And then we reply back and no, it's the real people sending these emails.
Or you know what? Many times we have had, because we've offered one-on-one calls. They just appear because they're curious. They didn't know this was for real. And we're like, yes, we are here. Like we took our time for you.
It's us.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about, which I was reflecting on today and yesterday actually, was you do have to, you know, be out there in life, being a part of this world to be able to share valuable messages. You can't simply be just hiding on your couch all day watching TV and then expect to write emails that are going to engage people, or just learn marketing, but not actually be living in this world. And the more you're actually moving and shaking, actually doing things in life, doing something with your life, the emails you're then able to send are just so personal and authentic, because you're just telling what's happening and you're telling a story, and people engage with that because it inspires them or for whatever reason.
We're kind of moving a bit away from the topic of meditation, getting a bit more technical about how you guys are engaging with people, that mm-hmm. this is something that I think can be extrapolated to any field. And I would love to hear, well, first, how the fact of working on your own, right? Like that flexibility of being self-employed, and also a bit of the struggles of having to have a way that you can generate some money, right? Because at the end of the day, you need some money to live. And also, maybe later, what are some of the specific techniques and services you're using?
When you're self-employed, when you're an entrepreneur, you actually get to see the benefits of being employed as well. So it's a two-way street of you have freedom. There's no boss telling you what to do. There's no meeting you have to attend at X PM, depending obviously what field you're in and how your clients are. But you're essentially doing work that you want to do, which is beautiful. And you get to work when you want. Whether that's 8 p.m. at night, or if it's 6 in the morning, or whenever you want to, which I love that freedom. But on the other hand, all of that responsibility of actually generating income, tax reporting, making sure you're always on the correct side of the law, and probably the hardest thing, creating a product that people actually want, that either solves a problem or improves their life, fulfills a need or a desire. Whenever you're working for a company, they already have that product. They already have the income, and you're just there helping them fulfill on that. So you don't have any of the headaches of ownership, but you don't have any of the freedom of choosing your own projects as much.
Yeah, and the company, well, unless that's your role, the company already has a defined vision, mission, and you know, goals, and a set of things that they need to achieve at the end of the year.
It opened my eyes to how good it can be to be a 9-to-5 employee. You just turn up, you do your work, the money comes in, that's that.
And then you shut off. Because once you're out,
yes,
you can deal with your own personal life.
Exactly. But now with that freedom, it is so beautiful to come up with a project, create a little plan, execute it, and then see the results. And if you fail, it's on you. If you succeed, it's on you. The rewards are on you. The costs are on you. So it's a lot of responsibility.
What are some of the main struggles?
Oh, I guess it depends where you're at, but early on, that struggle is, what am I offering? How am I communicating it? Who am I communicating it to? How am I delivering it? So all those kind of core business questions. And then we're not at the stage yet, but obviously when you move on from that, it's how do I get the right team in place to get mm-hmm. bigger and bigger? You can have a $1 million business with a 2-man team, even a $5 million business. But at some point, most people get a team and or a bigger team. So we're not at that phase. But the first phase is just that core entrepreneurship questions, which are so simple sounding, but they can be tough.
Do you want to add something, Celine?
No, I was just feeling that maybe the struggle that every single person has from the mind of thinking, at some point, I have to earn money.
I'm curious about how that's working for you. If you had maybe some steady income that allows you to relax a bit and focus on building good products and content, or if you had some downs where it seemed like it was going a bit worse.
Yeah. When I left my job, I had savings aside, and you know, those savings, I saw it as an investment in a business. So I don't advise anyone to just spend their savings willy-nilly. If you've got a business plan, and it doesn't need to be formal, but an idea of I'm actually investing in something that's going to give me a return, then in my opinion, I thought that was the best use of my savings by far, because you know, it'll pay 10x, 100x in the next years and decades, etc. So having that savings allowed me to go to zero income, and then the costs actually start coming in to, you know, paying for the software and other education and things like that. But in the first part of the journey, as an affiliate, I was able to become profitable selling other people's products. And then you transition to selling your own products. So you're creating the product, has costs and time. And again, went into a position of going backwards from there, and additional costs of running the business come in. And so there were some side jobs we were doing here and there, which were very helpful to, say, my dad. I was helping him out with some things here and there.
And my retreats and the trainings, the yoga teacher trainings. But I guess it's just when you're ready to be your own boss, quote unquote, you have to take that
responsibility, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, that's like in between. You have to walk the steps. You cannot get from, oh, I have a stable income to I have a 100% successful job and I don't have to care about anything else. There is this in-between phase where you're just figuring out, where you're trying out things. And we just take every single day as it comes and just seeing, do we have to change something? Do we have to act towards a different direction and so on?
And this comes back to people talk about what's your why? What's your motivation? What's your drive? And a good way to see if your why is actually strong enough is, what if you failed for the next 10 years? Would you go back to work for 2 years just to earn cash so you can go back to your entrepreneurship job? And if the answer is no, that's probably not a strong enough reason to start that business. And then it's more of a, just like a side hustle that you can get started just for some cash. And not every business needs to be some change the world's internal motivation. It can just be economically viable. But then no, that's not going to bring you much fulfillment either.
I would like to touch on some of the techniques, products, or services that you have used that you said, wow, how didn't we know about this technique before to market, advertise, maybe send emails, or maybe keep track of your work or spread maybe the work you're doing?
I guess the core foundational stuff for list management, there's hundreds of companies. We just happen to use Aweber. They have really good customer service. I don't think they're the best in terms of what they have to offer functionality-wise, but because the customer service is so good, we've been with them, we're happy to stick there.
Yeah. And we've been, something that came new to our knowledge, even though you've gotten books from him before, is using ClickFunnels. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. James? Obviously, we buy our domains from a place called Namecheap, but then we get them hosted with ClickFunnels, and we use ClickFunnels to build the websites. We've also used in the past WordPress with the Divi theme, but at the moment it's really with ClickFunnels. You can build very quickly and they allow you to have your sales integrated in there very easily. And we also use Thinkific for our online programs.
ClickFunnels? Yes. Is that a technique, a technology, a service?
It's a software.
It's a software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in marketing, there's a concept called a funnel where it's wider at the top and it's smaller at the bottom, and you get lots of people entering through the top, whether it's your blog post or a free lead, and then you're getting their emails, and then you're maybe bringing them onto a webinar and then a strategy call, and then they buy something. So it's this whole funnel, but there's even different lenses. There's the front end of the funnel, the middle, the back end. So you can get quite detailed there, but ClickFunnels just tries to help you build your funnels more easily and gives you an easy way to build upsells and downsells and other things like that.
And you build the whole website inside it, or you just build tracking for the website?
You build the whole website, and then in there you can put in your tracking codes. They're called pixels for Facebook or for YouTube. And so talking about those are the different platforms. We advertise on Instagram, Facebook, and we used to use YouTube. We don't use it at the moment, but it's also very good, but mainly those three.
On YouTube, you use ads in terms of like a video format, or actually just a thumbnail with a video linked to it?
Video, and it's so with YouTube, you can be in display or insert or in view, I think it's called now. But it's a great platform. If you're good on video, it's through the Google ads is how you get to advertise on YouTube.
Okay, moving a bit out of marketing now, this is an existential question. Do you see your life continuing this path for a long time? Do you think you have in mind a time where you would like maybe to divert a bit, try other things, or maybe retire? Have you had the time to think about it a bit, or is this still in too early stages that you're...
I never thought about that question, but while you were asking me, I felt my body with a yes. If I could choose, I would just continue doing the same thing, sharing this message my whole life.
For me, life has given me what I need. When I needed to move jobs, it made sure that happened. When I needed to leave my job and go into entrepreneurship, it made sure that happened. When I needed a business partner and the love of my life, it made sure that happened. So while my mind has ideas of, yes, it definitely wants to keep going down the entrepreneurship path, I know that life actually can not get in the way, but it can push me in directions that it knows is best for me. I'm always open to seeing, I'm present and conscious and aware of what opportunities life is offering and what hints it's trying to give me. But at the same time, my mind says, yes, definitely continue down the entrepreneurship path.
What would be some of the things that if you had right now, you're two people, I know you maybe consult with some people, outsource certain things and tasks. what would you do differently if you had a team of 10, 20, or maybe 100 people?
What would we do differently? I think it's just like an extension. It's an extension of us. So I think there wouldn't be such a difference. I've learned that when you have something so valuable you're working on, it's very important to have people you trust and who understand your path. I'm talking about my experience with working with my mother and her husband. They also manage a festival, and we've always been a small team, meaning just people, just us, just four people maximum. And I guess what will we do different is just truly being able to not just get someone because we need help, but truly connect with the person who would be working with us.
I guess that's the hard part, right? It's not just outsourcing something to India or just pay somebody to edit a video, but find somebody who can also take decisions and you can delegate some of the thinking because they have the same mindset. They wanna go for the same project and actually join.
Yeah. Yeah, not just because of the money or because of the time or because...
One thing that we haven't talked about, like you've mentioned a few times, the retreats and and you as well, James. In what locations, on what dates, or how many people? What's the format? How do you organize this gathering? How do you tell people, okay, we're going to be in this island or we're going to be in this city next month? How does that work?
The first one we offered back in February this year, we advertised through YouTube, and the way we had it happen was people filled out a little questionnaire, we spoke to them live, and we did zero selling. We pretty much told them the decision's in your court. If you feel in tune with us, if you feel in tune with this journey, then we'll give you the pricing details and we'll go from there. So we found them through YouTube and through Selena's network as well on Instagram. She has a lot of people who follow her and
not too many, but a few people have connected with me. And so it's at the point where I said we're offering that retreat, some were interested.
From that February one, we don't actually have a next date. So with us, we will always go to a location first and make sure everything is good before we ever bring someone there. And we're actually looking for the next location. And that's why we don't have a date yet, because we don't have the next location yet. But when we did have that, then... Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's, again, using the email list we've cultivated and created to let people know what's on offer, having those video calls to touch base and see if it's the right time for them. And then essentially, it's just like organizing a group. You need to get them the right information about travel, about logistics, all of the kind of boring stuff, but which is important for people to have a good time.
I guess like also the difference between just a regular yoga retreat or just a retreat where you focus more on your physical and your mind only, I guess it's easier to market because it's very clear of what you're getting. And then with our retreat, for example, because it was a plant medicine retreat, you have to trust us and we have to be able to feel like that person who wants to join us is ready to join us, which is a little bit trickier compared to, oh, I'm just offering 6 days and we're going to do yoga and that's it. And then the rest of the day, you're just going to chill. It enters the depth that needs worth and needs respect.
How do you build that trust?
Through your life journey, you become someone who you're proud to be and you're not afraid to be. And then you meet someone and you talk to them from this point of authenticity, from this point of integrity. And whenever you meet someone like that, you recognize they've got this kind of core to them. Maybe you can't describe it, but you just know that they are someone you can trust. When we speak with people, it's always speaking from that place of authenticity and our own direct experience. So from that, people feel us because they don't pick up any resonance of we're trying to sell them. They don't pick up any resonance of we're just trying to make something sound good. And yeah, it just seems in human nature to be able to figure out if someone is like being sneaky or not.
Because we work with a depth that needs vulnerability and respect and trust. We choose normally places where you are energetically protected. So let's say not in the city. We try not to be fully in the city. Like now in Berlin, it's just an immersion, meaning it's just 3 hours. But if it was a retreat, which is a place where we're in nature, where we're supported by the culture and things like that, maximum 30 people, maybe.
Thanks a lot for sharing all that stuff with us. I would like now to transition into learning a bit more about you both. about your daily life, leave aside a bit of your work, and then think about how you handle your daily routine and day after day. The first question is, how does your day-to-day look like?
Every single day is different based because of what we shared with you. Our reality has shifted completely. But let's say something that mostly happens is we wake up and we care about hygiene, cleaning our mouths in a way of that allows us to start a day off fresh. So taking a few Ayurvedic knowledge, like cleaning your tongue, and then we do oil pulling. I don't know if you guys have heard of that. Oil pulling is with coconut oil and it cleanses our mouth. And then after that, we stand on our yoga mat or on our open space and see what comes through, either meditation or movement. Sometimes my body starts moving and dancing and or yoga. And
then it's breakfast time.
It's breakfast time, our favorite time.
Well, and Selena or I, or both of us, will cook up a nice, you know, smoothie bowl for breakfast, and we both have a vegan lifestyle. So it'll be a delicious breakfast. And then after that, we get into work. Mm-hmm. And we normally maybe work up a maximum 2 to 3 hours in one chunk before we're going to have some sort of break, which might be for a snack or for lunch or for a walk outside or just to talk with each other and not to be working. And then we come back to work again later that day for another 2 or 3 hours or whatever it is. Dinner somewhere in there. And we try not to work too late.
Yeah, we have learned that. We've done it. We've worked very late and we end up just at 1 a.m. We're like, okay, we need to go to bed. But that has led us to understand that until 6 p.m., we have to bring the energy down of being in the mind and working so we can stay connected to ourselves and enjoy every day and not feeling like it's just a bubble of day after day. Because working by yourself, it just means every single moment can be work.
And I think there's a lot of advice about when you're starting out a business, you really need to be focused on it. And people end up sacrificing some of the really beautiful things in life, such as their relationships or their health or enjoyment or fun. And I truly believe you can have both. You can be very focused building a business. But, and I always try my best for this, if Selena's wanting to talk to me or whatever's happening, that's a priority. So I don't think you need to have one or the other. You need to be good enough in what you're doing to be able to be focused when you need to be focused. But always remember what your priorities are. Because if you chose between losing a business or losing the love of your life, I think the choice is pretty clear what you'd rather lose there. I hope it's pretty clear for most people.
Yep. So, do you think your current life is simple? Do you consider it simple?
Yes.
It's definitely not as complicated as some other lives, but we do a lot of traveling. So, we're always moving places and checking all the stuff about visas and finding places to stay. And so, there's complexity there. But the work's pretty simple because the mission is pretty clear. And when that's like that, and it's a small team. So, small team, clear mission, working online, like that gives itself to some simplicity.
And I guess for our lives, I responded with such a clarity of yes, because we are pulled more towards a simple life, meaning we do not need to entertain our minds in a way that we don't need to do something different every single day. Like we just fill our desires with the most simplest thing in the world, be it just eating in nature or just having an ice cream, just simple things that fill our hearts.
We're not addicted to having to do new things. We love going to a theme park. We love all the stuff that everyone else loves, but we don't have to do it every single day.
Yeah.
You can, through meditation, you find a lot of contentment in just seeing how freaking beautiful a tree is, or just some very simple things of life, just truly eating. And people eat with their phone, they eat watching TV, they eat at their computer, and you actually miss the joy of eating. And if you simplify that process, again, beauty, joy, happiness, energy comes from that. And then I believe the food is digested much better too, probably.
And even though we travel a lot, me as a woman, for example, I have a lot of clothes and I have as in like more outfits than a man. And in there, I do feel like I have a lot of awareness of garbage, of buying lots of things. And I tend to choose simplicity over just because I like something to get it, just these experiences too.
What time of the day do you usually find to meditate?
In terms of a more formal setting, it's always in the morning. So we wake up and then some yoga and some meditation where it'll be on the yoga mat, we might sit down. But like we talk about in the guide is that meditation can become 24/7.
Yeah, so it used to be for us, for example, that in any moment of the day, we used to just stand still and we would just drop into a meditative state. Because right now it feels that we are more, our minds are more active. They have to be more active because we're working more with logic and setting up the work. That doesn't happen so often right now, but it can happen any moment. But we have felt that in the morning between 5 a.m. and 7 are the times where we feel like the energy is very pure to be in that space.
Yeah, mornings before the world is up, before there's too much craziness going on, is a beautiful time to meditate, and it might be hard to get out of bed, but if you can manage it, it's pretty
good. That's worth, yeah.
Do you guys find time to do exercise as well? Maybe yoga you consider as exercise?
For me, I've never seen a difference. I just see movement. So either it's yoga, it's either dancing for me, it's either workout, as in specific muscles, let's say. My energy truly just guides me wherever I need it. Sometimes you're going to see me on the yoga mat sweating and going on squats like crazy. Sometimes you're going to be seeing me dancing and having a more energetic session. And sometimes you're going to be seeing me in yoga, just stretching in a more deeper way. I guess I've never seen a difference between my movement and exercising.
I don't go to the gym. But I always take opportunities if I'm going to carry a heavy shopping bag or something, then like just getting exercise in those natural circumstances. And then yoga is definitely physical if you're doing it for that purpose, or if you're doing a more intense class, it's a great way for physical strength too.
So I guess I was going to ask you about your commute, but I guess if you work from home, you don't really...
Yeah, we don't. Sometimes we go out to work at a little cafe. No, we have.
It depends where we are. Like, for example, when we were in Ubud in Bali, we felt that being out would do something to us. We would get more in the flow. But sometimes it gets tiring, too, to be around so many people and you need your space. So it truly depends where you are. When we're in Germany, we mostly stay in the apartment because we enjoy being naked and just drinking lots of water, going to the toilet whenever we want, instead of having to think so many times of where you are, what do you have to pay for, etc., etc. Yeah.
What are some other activities you enjoy and that you don't consider work?
I love snowboarding. Yes. And one of these days, I think we're going to go and find a resort where we can work there for a few weeks or maybe a month or two. And then I can get up in the morning, do a couple hours of snowboarding, some work, some more snowboarding. That's a little dream for me. And then we love Uluwatu, working in Uluwatu. It's very easy to go surfing down to the beach.
For me, it's dancing and anything that has to do with art, photography, expression, even if it's drawing, if I try.
And I wanted to also know a bit about if you guys consume any media. So you maybe watch TV, read books, or listen to podcasts, audiobooks.
We have been enjoying Netflix quite a lot.
We get a series and sometimes we use that as like a little break, but it's definitely not the best habit to be in. It could be a documentary, a movie, a series. Facebook, when I'm on my laptop, I've got a newsfeed blocker, so I never go on Facebook on the laptop, but I do go on the phone and either I'm checking out ads, I'm looking at other people's ads, or I'm just connecting with friends a little bit.
I use Instagram a lot and that's mainly the only thing that I use. Facebook I only use if someone writes to me. Instagram is mainly, I feel like I do use it in a conscious way, meaning who do I follow? I know I follow people because of specific reasons and not because I like the way it looks. And of course, social media is something that you just can get addicted to. And it's just a typical thing of getting the phone out and just scrolling.
And it sucks the joy out of life. It really does. It numbs your mind. It gets you into this like repetitive, low consciousness place. So you do have to be really careful and you can use it consciously, of course, but it's just difficult for people to do.
You check other people's ads to learn from them?
Or? Yeah, of course. I'm always, as a marketer, you're typically always looking at what the other marketers are doing. And if you see something that's good and especially if you buy, you're like, why is this ad so compelling that I want to buy? And obviously it's not the ad, it's a few pages down, but just being aware of what makes something, what makes you want to buy, and then and you learn through that way.
I saw that yesterday on the streets, right? Like you pointed out how these two men that were standing still in the middle of the street, they had two money boxes, right? Instead of one. And I hadn't really paid attention to that.
Yes. And then obviously people gave to both boxes. I'm sure they've got an increase there. Books wise, it's about books about copywriting, about marketing, and then obviously about meditation and spirituality. Zapier is something we use all the time. Really good. It allows automation between all the different softwares we use. So like adding people to email lists, removing them. If you've got an online business, many interconnected apps, Zapier, Z-A-P-I-E-R.
I've tried that one. I tend to use Buffer. I haven't used it too much, but I know that some others are like Hootsuite.
Yeah, it's not social media focused though.
Which one?
Zapier. We never use it for social media.
Oh, okay. So it's for other sort of automations.
Yeah, so say someone gets a free guide from us, and then they actually go to a second step. They join a webinar. We take them off the first email list. We put them on a new email list. So we're always connecting to people at the right stage.
It integrates with a Weber?
Yeah, it integrates with emails and integrates with ClickFunnels, with Google Sheets.
Maybe with MailChimp as well.
Of course, we're definitely with MailChimp.
We'll have to take a look. So
you don't need it unless things are a little more complicated. But if you do have complexity, it can save you thousands of tasks a month.
One of the things I wanted to know also, you mentioned Instagram, for example. What are some of the things that distract you when you're trying to get work done? Like maybe writing or maybe engaging with customers, creating some content?
I think for me is Instagram, just because of that conditioning, that, you know, movement of getting the phone to you. That's pretty much the only thing, or just a phone, having the phone near you.
I find with the social platforms, sometimes it numbs me to the point that my creativity is weakened. And I'm not in that like electric state where you can think clearly, when you can focus and just have that consciousness. It doesn't really distract me, as in I want to hop over and look at it. But if I look at some things for too long, then it really affects my performance in the future.
What are the conditions, or when do you get your best ideas, do you think?
For me, it's definitely at night. I've been a night owl for almost all my life. It has shifted now the past 4 years, but mostly at night. Between 1 or 3 a.m.
A lot of ideas come through at night for me as well, but they then evolve over time in the daytime. Normally, maybe the seed comes through at nighttime, and then through the day, I'll work through it a little more.
And what techniques, or maybe what time of the day, or how do you disconnect from work, disconnect from social media, from the phone?
For us, I guess the mornings and nights are the parts where, back again, saying that the energy is very subtle and very pure. It can be very pure. So in those moments, we do try not to be on social media, not to have the phone so much unless we're playing some music. And just before going to bed, even though, of course, you just fall into taking your phone a lot, you know, mornings and nights are the moments where we connect.
And just make life easy for yourself. If you know that you're going to be distracted by your phone, put your phone in another room, put it in a drawer, and then turn off the wireless internet. Create the circumstances that makes it easier for you so that you don't have to worry about it. If the phone's sitting right beside you, of course, you're going to be drawn to it. So just put it away.
I wanted to know also, do you guys feel that sometimes you get bored? And maybe if you do, like, how do you deal with that?
I've never been bored in my life, I think. I don't get bored.
I haven't been bored in the last few years. Frustrated, yes, but not bored. With entrepreneurship, it's never ending. And that's why you got to be in there for the long run. If you build a business that's not really in that heartfelt passion, you're not going to be that happy, because there's a lot to do and you're going to be having to do something that turns into just another job that maybe pays more.
And I guess, yeah, boredom has a lot to do with your own relationship to yourself. If that relationship is not there, you're going to get bored all the time because you're constantly looking outside and trying to kind of like run away from you. So I guess that's something that has been a part of myself, you know, all my life, just nourishing the relationship to myself.
Thank you for saying that. How would you guys define success?
You know, you get to the end of your life and you think, I did everything I could. You know, I think that's a pretty good version of it.
Coming back to label, it's a label that we understand very differently. But for me, success is being able to give everything with an open heart. That's success.
Is there anything you say to yourself in the morning?
I used to work with affirmations.
And they're very powerful, you know, if you want to switch your mindset or get you feeling good and feeling more confident, which we've been in that stage of our lives when we needed it and it served the purpose then. These days, we don't use them as much. Sometimes I use techniques to, you know, alter my state. If I feel really triggered by something, I don't feel like feeling that negative energy around and I want to change it, then I switch my state.
I guess in the morning for me, rather than words or mental repetition, it is a touch. My hands, actually, the left hand on my heart and the right on my lower stomach. I guess that's can be similar to the feeling of telling something yourself in the morning.
You know, we're talking about personal success. Who comes to mind if I ask you for a successful person?
My mom. Yeah, my mom. I just got back from working with her and working with women, and she shared a few things that she hasn't shared with me directly, and it just reminded me of what she has been through in all her life, how she was able to give me the life that I have right now, or to give me the path at least. And in her everyday life, she's working on herself, and I guess she's successful and just in her being. Yeah.
That's great to hear. And you have a close relationship with your mom.
Yeah, very. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's tough because sometimes when you know people, you know that they don't see themselves as a success. And pretty, even some people who you'd say you've done so much, you've had so much, you see that own negativity inside of them, of their own sense of failure. And then you obviously never want to embody that. So by actually knowing someone deeply, you see that inner turmoil that a lot of them have, which makes it very hard to then use them as an example, because you wouldn't want to end up with that inner turmoil at the same time. So there's a lot of people I respect and who I think have done so well in their life, but it seems a lot of people struggle internally with a sense of love for themselves. And anyone who has a sense of self-respect, a sense of love for themselves, and not in an egoistic way, I think they're worth looking up to in a way.
Mm-hmm.
When you define success for you or for other people, I feel that maybe some people that you know or you meet or you see on TV or something, for that definition, they have overpassed it. You know, they surpassed it. They are already successful in some way. So I feel that with social media and the widespread of like a lot of people doing their own things and also editing a lot and showing to the public a really finished product or something like that, we tend to think that we're not successful because a lot of people are achieving things at a fast pace, right? That we see that. And I believe that creates a lot of frustration for what you're saying. A lot of people who think that they're not successful. It's really easy to find somebody who seems to do the same thing you're doing, but better.
I think the thing you realize once you've done a lot of self-work is that you can only really be happy with your life. And this isn't about not being ambitious. It's about being happy while you've got these dreams and ambitions. You can only get there through self-work. So if you've come to fame or come to wealth in a way which you didn't do that work in the process, you've got a crazy amount of internal issues that are happening with you. Also, because the more fame you have, the more wealth you have, the more problems you have in one sense. People start suing you. You've got 30 accountants you need to meet with. You've got to manage your wealth. You've got 15 different meetings of all these new challenges come that bring additional inner challenges. So it's very hard. The only person at the end of the day who knows if you're successful is going to be yourself. Like, you can only judge yourself on that.
Well, and the people around you, right?
Yes. The people, if you're very close. But just, yeah, stop looking at other people and trying to judge their life, because unless you know them very deeply, you just can't know.
What would you say to whoever's listening? And then if you could spread that message to everyone in the planet, right? What would you choose to say?
Whatever you're going through right now, it truly has a reason for a bigger mission that you have in this life. And that no matter how hard it is, keep trusting and that calling that is right in your heart center.
I'd say that when you come to know love from within yourself through witnessing, you know, what you truly are and seeing the reality, this reality, then you will become everything that you ever wanted to be or dreamed of being, and you'll have the power that you want to have in life. So it comes back to love, but not regular love as we know it.
That's really nice. Thanks for sharing that. If you could go back and tell your 20-year-old self something and do it different, what would it be?
I wouldn't do anything differently. This path led me here. I'm happy where I am, very happy. And, you know, if I did something differently, then I don't know where I'd be. I'd tell them, suck it up in those tough times, but keep going. This is the lesson.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done anything different either. If I would have been able to tell her something, it would be basically just the same message I just shared with you guys, to trust that the moment you've been waiting for is actually going to come. You're just not ready yet, and just trust on that path.
Is there something that you guys are paranoid about?
Paranoid about? No, I don't think so. And if you do look into a lot of the negative aspects that maybe there is in the world, you can get a paranoia mm-hmm. that might even be understandable. But we don't spend a lot of time investigating negative things. We rather want to investigate or share positive messages.
My life used to be different though, because of the awakening or enlightenment or whatever you want to call that. Thanks to that, I do experience life differently now. I used to wake up with anxieties every single day, randomly, without any reason at all. So I guess it did is hand in hand with paranoia. It used to be very intense, actually. But because I got the blessing to understand life the way I do now, it's not there anymore.
And the mind can still do its thing. You know, there's still fears come up for me. What if we end up failing? What if we make bad decisions?
Yeah,
have we made the right decisions? In certain emotional periods, the mind comes up with questions like that. And you just have to not get too dragged down by them and then look at them honestly instead of looking at them emotionally.
Okay. I don't want to forget to ask you about recommendations. First, maybe what other people that you have followed maybe can help on the path that you're taking.
I guess I'd look back at the people who got me started. One of them was Eckhart Tolle. And he came into my life when I was, I think, still in high school. And I listened to his audio, Practicing the Power of Now. It's a good introduction to meditation. Vipassana, I went to one of the retreats. It was useful for me. I think for people is if you see a book that you feel that you need to read it, just buy it. $10, $14. It's not going to break the bank. You know, you pay $10 a month for Netflix, right? So a book can have such a big change in your life, but just follow that instinct of what you feel you need to do. And maybe that's, I need to go talk to Nono and ask him about books. Or maybe it's, I need to go look online and find what book calls me. So there's no one hard and fast rule of finding information, but just start getting to know who you are, what works for you, what methods work for you, and listen to that, trust that.
Yeah. The way you just described it was pretty much how I've been self-discovering myself all my life, just going within and seeing, okay, where do I have to go next? Like, who am I supposed to learn from next? Those books came to me from a very early age, actually. But if I would call out one that, you know, stood out, would be the books from Marianne Williamson. Yeah, her and which one is the other book? Jack. God, why do I forget his name? Oh, Blackout. I do need to bring in his name in this podcast, though.
We'll add it into the notes.
We'll add him. Yeah. Because there's a blackout right now. But yeah.
We'll put it in the episode notes.
Yes.
What's the book about?
Well, not just one book. Actually, he has gone his whole work. Yeah. Anything that he has been sharing, it speaks truly to my soul. It makes you feel reassured in the path of enlightenment or life.
I think if it's the same guy, this guy's worked with Jim Carrey before, so he's quite a well-known in spiritual... Jeff someone?
Yes.
Okay, anyway, we'll put it in the notes.
I'm also sorry. Them.
We already told people where they can find you online. I'll just remind that. So it's guidingyourawakening.com.
Yes.
Yes.
Right? And we'll put links to your social media accounts as well, so people can go there. I wanted to ask you, what do you think of slowing down in life?
Amazing idea. I think people can get confused by what that means. It's about the concept of time moving more slowly because your consciousness is elevated. Or you can talk about, you know, not doing as many things. But either way, I think the saying, sometimes you have to slow down to speed up, is very important. And what I've learned in my life is taking the time to make decisions about projects makes me far more satisfied and more successful even if I'm really excited about a project, I need to just let it sit for a little bit, maybe a day or two, and then I decide if I want to go into it. And that's an example of slowing down. You can do far less, but you're doing the right things. So the outcomes are there. You've got more time. You've got less stress. I think it's beautiful.
Slowing down, I guess if we would talk about that years ago, it wouldn't have been such a big topic like it is now. Energetically, everyone's running right now. So yes, to slowing down, be it mentally or emotionally or just your physical self and not running, not moving so fast. If you can start with just one single aspect in your life, that will change everything. To slow down, yeah.
Cool. Thank you, people pro, slowing down. The last question, well, almost the last question is, what's next for you? Is there anything on the horizon that is different or just continuing with the path you have right now?
We're probably going to have a little sit down and think mm-hmm. about direction. And
yes.
And, you know, we've done that a few times already, but it's another moment in time for us to put a little bit of break on output
mm-hmm.
and take a time to think and talk with each other and feel into where we do want to go. So that's what we will be doing a little bit over the next week, actually.
I tend to do this question to some people as well. Mm-hmm. Is kind of the last one. So would like to know if there's something that you want to ask me about the project, maybe about this or about the work that you're doing related to this.
I love that question. I had so many questions for you during while we were talking, but I'm like, I cannot bring them up while we do. Yes. Where do you feel like you're simplifying and slowing down in your life?
So this is a recurring topic of my life. I was going to say work, but this feels a bit more like my life. Right now, I have a full-time job. So for the last 2 years, and one aspect that I'm conscious that I have done it purposefully to slow down is reducing the amount of things that I do. Like, I've tried a lot of things in my life, and you get tired of some, you get to continue on others, and maybe some you do every couple months. And this process has taken years. It's been like I had to try a lot of stuff to see what things are the ones that move me more. And I had to do a lot of journaling and writing to actually identify what things make me a bit happier. It all comes down to, I wouldn't say sacrificing activities, but categorizing what matters the most. So it's come down to sketching, because I like it to connect to people and to places and to things. And then writing in general. So writing, storytelling, might be journaling, might be adding little snippets of text to my sketches, and also writing small essays on simplicity. And then this. So actually extending that conversation and those research topics that I like to think about and reflect on my own and read about in the form of conversations with people like you that are trying to find a different worldview, a different way of seeing what seems to be the common way of living that we're being indoctrinated to live some way, right? And even though nowadays it seems like the norm is trying to get out in some way, there's so many customized ways of living, I think that's good. But yeah, that would be my main way of simplifying. You know, the slogan I say is like doing less better. And at some point, you realize that even though you're trying to simplify, each of those mono topics, right, individual topics, gets really complex on its own, because there's so many facets of each single thing that you can do. Even if you stick to one, if you stick just to podcasting, right, you have podcasting, you have editing, you have video, you have other mm-hmm. forms, you have a lot of stuff, right, that can go on. So I feel like simplifying is really hard. It's more about choosing what matters to you and not put effort in what doesn't. Leave that aside. I mean, for me, these things are still hobbies. I haven't taken the turn of like actually making it a full-time thing and try to monetize it. I mean, nothing we've talked about today is sponsored, is ads or anything, right? That doesn't mean that it couldn't be that way. But yeah, for me, that would be the main way of slowing down. I think I'm traveling a bit too much lately, so that doesn't allow me to slow down too much. But as many people that know me will know, a lot of simplifying I try to do is like, even if I try to do a lot of stuff, I try to automate a lot, to use coding skills to automate repeatable processes. But yeah, that's maybe the main thing that I would say.
Yeah.
Thanks for the question.
Can I ask you one?
Yeah.
So I was wondering, if you look back when you started Getting Simple until now, what has been one of the biggest challenges the most challenging time, and then what's been one of the most fulfilling events or experiences you've had since then?
I think the sense of grittiness, of actually maintaining the activity of practicing writing. I do writing for practicing writing and communicating ideas. And I think you've been in that process at some point. You acted as one of my reviewers, right? Editors or something, providing suggestions and stuff. And I can feel this started, it wasn't formalized as Getting Simple until later on, but this started in 2013 or so. And I started writing more and more, right? And one of those fulfilling things that I feel is the sense of progress, right? Like I can see thousands of words that I've written since then, and I have joy when I go back into my early drafts from 6 years, 5 years ago, and I can spot a lot of things that are wrong, that, you know, that I can now see things that I wouldn't know were wrong when I was writing before, that you have to express differently, you have grammatical errors. So yeah, I think that fulfillment, and also the fact that once something is formalized, you forget about all the struggles that you had in your mind. So I try to capture those while journaling so I can go back to them and reflect on them. If you meet a person, it's really hard after months or years to remember what you were thinking about that person right before meeting them. Maybe you were nervous, maybe you thought they were not going to be as, I don't know, like happy as they were, or they were going to be mean or something. If you don't capture that before jumping into doing it, you lose the opportunity to then, you know, have that memory and reflect back and see it in retrospect.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for asking me. I just want to thank you a lot for your time. I think it's been great that you managed to come here to Malaga. Thanks a lot for being in the podcast. I hope you had a good time.
I can't believe it's been 2 hours. It's gone so smoothly and felt so nice the whole time.
And if we talk about slowing down and being present, like the podcast puts you into that state of being. You have to be fully present with each other. So
yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a good opportunity to catch up. I would just remind everyone who's watching, thanks a lot for watching.
I think
you can reach us out, any of us. You can go to reach them out at guidingyourawakening.com and reach me out at gettingsimple.com. You can find episode notes at gettingsimple.com/podcast. We'll try to add as many things that we've talked about as we can, so you can access their guides, you can access the links of the books that we've mentioned and all that stuff. If you want to help out with the podcast, the best way is to rate it on the Apple Podcast Store. If you like what we talked about, or if you enjoyed the podcast, if you have any comments, suggestions, email us or send a tweet or a message on Instagram or whatever, okay? Thank you so much watching, for listening, and for being there.
Thank you. Bye.
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 See you next time.
Hi, dear. These next minutes are here for yourself to truly be here. Simply do the best that you can. Place one hand on your heart and the other on your belly. Feel your heartbeat and the movement of your breathing. Right now, in this very moment, give yourself permission to not do anything at all. You can let go of everything to come to yourself. Slowly, let go of your hands. Let's start off by sitting comfortably. Sit up, elongating your spine, rolling your shoulders up one time towards the ears and then slowly back and down. Let your eyes shut softly. Let the space between your eyebrows be spacious and wide. Let your jaw relax. And bring your fullest attention to your breath. To your heart space, take the deepest breath that you can take. Hold it. And as slow as you can, exhale. The coming up exercise is called Samavriti, same length breathing. Simply keep listening to my voice. I will count for you. Take a deep inhale for 1, 2, 3, 4, and out 3, 2, 1. Welcome in your breath 2, 3, 4, and exhale 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. Keep counting in your head. Take 3 more rounds just like this. Can you truly be here for the next 3 rounds? Whatever your mind is doing, it's okay. All your attention is on your breath. Good. Take 1 hand to your heart and 1 to your belly. Know that you're more than enough. Slowly and carefully open your eyes. Allow what you gained from these few minutes breathe life into the rest of your day and to your loved ones, so you can truly be there for yourself and for them.